Well, I mean, I don't know. We said we'd do it. So the aggregate scoreline last week, which I got wrong because I didn't know the scores of one of the games, was 7-1. This week, the aggregate score since we last did a podcast is 0-0. So I don't know. I've asked for a listening question, so we'll do that later in the show. That might be fun, right? Probably have a question about Phil Jones' best position or something.
Are you currently in it? Yeah. What do you say about either of these games? United have now scored one goal in the last seven games against the Big Six in commas, and that was a penalty. It's the same pattern in all of these against teams that Ollie feels some nervousness about, isn't it?
Well, kind of, except I don't know that this game particularly fitted into the pattern of these games, in that basically this was like a game against Burnley or something, where United had loads of the ball in the third between after the halfway line in the opposition half, just passing the ball sideways. I mean, they did quite well pressing Chelsea's defenders, forced a couple of mistakes and stuff. So I thought like United were on the front foot in this one in a way that they haven't necessarily. It wasn't like they were happy with the 0-0, but
no,
they just really lacked creativity.
They lacked creativity, and part of that's to do with the combination in midfield, but also, you know, secure at the back and didn't push that back line up sort of 20 yards further that it could have been to compress it in midfield and force some mistakes, you know, deeper into Chelsea's half, and for understandable reasons, which we've talked about and is now becoming very boring. So it was cautious. But I think gone are the days when United are happy to sort of park the bus and try and break. Now, United can play and keep possession, knowing that probably they're the best team in the league at scoring in transitional phases, right? Or on the break or on the counter. And it just didn't, you know, there were a few opportunities, but United didn't really create any good chances in this game as a result of sort of, you know, a little bit of caution.
Yeah, no, not anything even approaching a sort of statistically significant good chance, I would say. I mean, Mason Greenwood had a fine shot from outside the area that didn't go far wide, but, you know, obviously that's not a good chance. That's just, he's good. And Fred, one of his shots only narrowly missed, which was better than anyone was expecting. Rashford hit that free kick pretty well, forced Mondi into a punch out. But, you know, it was a tough watch. I mean, the biggest chance in terms of numbers in the game was the half an XG chance of the Callum Hudson-Odoi lovely first-time cross, which Giroud did okay to get in, but it's like really, I mean, I know, sorry, talking of boring and broken record, just so easy for him to peel off Lindelof and get into space. Then actually United centre-backs did all right for most of the game, I thought.
I thought they did in those sort of, you know, classic defender duels. Yeah. They do okay, you know. It's like neither of them are bad defenders in those sort of... you know, Lindelof has a problem physically, obviously, boring, and Maguire has a problem positionally and especially with pace. But that wasn't really challenged today by Chelsea, I don't think. You know, like facing crosses coming into the box or being able to defend between the lines of your box, they do pretty well. That's why United's defensive record last season was pretty good, not so great this season. So it's when United push that 20 yards up the field that they really have problems. And that wasn't tested so much today.
Yeah, and I thought it was kind of a slightly odd decision on the part of Tuchel to play Giroud over Werner for exactly that reason. Obviously, like Giroud scored an amazing goal in midweek or whatever, but you'd think that if you asked Maguire and Lindelof, like, which one of these two attackers would you rather be facing based on your strengths and weaknesses, is a pretty trivial decision, isn't it? So I thought that was maybe a bit of a mistake from old Tommy Tuchel.
Well, the Chelsea have scored, 9 in 10 games under Tuchel, I think. And so, you know, that's for all the attacking talent, Mount, Giroud, Werner, Havertz, you know, all the talent. He doesn't know what the combination is that he wants. And so I guess he's, you know, focused on the defensive side of things, which was a real mess at Chelsea and trying to sort that bit out. And then he'll try and get the machine working up front, which, you know, with all that talent, he should do. It's clear he doesn't trust Hudson-Odoi. Hudson-Odoi may be regretting signing that new contract now, I think, rather than
I don't think it's true that he doesn't trust Hudson-Odoi. I think he's played him a ton more than Lampard played him. He played him today when he didn't have to, and he took him off because he got injured. Mm. So I think it's actually inaccurate to say. I think he said one negative thing about Hudson-Odoi in the press after a game, but then played him the subsequent two games. So
yeah, but he's taken him off both times, hasn't he?
Well, today he took him off because he had massive, like, had to have a massive ice pack on his leg. Like, he was clearly in.
Thought he was faking it. Faking it. Anyway, no. I mean, that's Chelsea's problem, you know, trying to score. And apparently it's United's problem when we face the big six. It's obviously a mental problem now.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of the discourse that I've seen around this game, lots and lots and lots of people talking about how much we miss Paul Pogba in a game like this, and I could not agree more. I thought he was he was a massive miss. I mean, and let's talk a little bit about team selection, because a front three of Dan James and then some other players.
Marcus Rashford.
Bringing this up Greenwood. To talk about. And Greenwood playing as the central striker, yeah. Rashford playing on the left, James playing off the right. I mean, James has been in much better form lately, but he was very busy in the first half. But listen, there's a quality issue there, clearly. If there isn't an overall quality issue there, there was a quality issue there in the game today.
Yep.
And Mason Greenwood couldn't really get into the game, but he did. He actually had a very Martial-esque performance, I thought. It was a lot of fine link-up play and lots of good little touches and layoffs and things. And I was screaming when he took Greenwood off.
Yeah.
I was just going absolutely mad.
He always does as well.
Exactly. It's so rote that they were. He was at one point, like, James had just had a knock at that point, and Gary Neville and Martin Tyler said they're delaying the substitution to see if Dan James is all right. I'm like, why are they delaying the substitution to see if Dan James is all right? Why aren't they just taking off Dan James? Like, anyway, that's, you know.
Yes.
Move Greenwood to the right and play Martial through the middle if you're going to bring Martial on.
I mean, it's only 10 minutes or whatever. Anyway, And just what the one substitution today. I mean, look, it kind of, with Martial out of form and Cavani injured, and Cavani has, you know, he's 34, he's going to get injuries. It does kind of expose United's sort of thinness up front. And Rashford, obviously, you know, his better performances and numbers of late, and I'm going to completely contradict what I might have said 2 years ago, have been coming from the left. And so, you know, Martial in form and playing like the Martial we know he can, but doesn't do often enough, is that perfect number nine for us. But it's a problem when he's been so horribly out of form, and with Cavani injured, as I said, you know, we're a bit thin up front. It's why United were so interested in Sancho, one more high quality attacker. Reports this week that United are not interested in Sancho anymore, i.e. aren't willing to pay the money it would take to bring him in, which is a shame because despite a quiet start to the season, he's absolutely flying at the moment. 11 goals, 16 assists in the league alone after a very quiet start. But anyway, you know, you're right, Dan James, quality issue, got a couple of goals recently, but it's hard for him, especially on the right. I think to get the best out of Dan James, whatever ceiling he has, if you play him off the left, at least he can cut in and you know, the defender then has two problems. Is he going to go out on the outside or is he going to cut in and shoot? So the balance didn't feel quite right at times today.
And with the injury issues, there's only two selection decisions, and that's Dan James or Martial and Lindelof or Bailly. And I have to say, this hurts as I say this, like, on every level, this hurts. I totally understand why Ole picked Dan James over Anthony Martial. Absolutely. If you told me that I would have said that sentence in the future at some point, I would have called you a liar, but I totally get it. Lindelof over Bailly. I mean, we've talked a little bit about how maybe Lindelof and Maguire make sense as a partnership in these big six games because we are going to sit deeper and be less exposed on the turn. Certainly, if you knew Giroud was playing, you could say, OK. But that sort of makes the argument that Lindelof would be better at playing the role that he plays in these games than Bailly would, which I just don't believe is true, because of course Bailly famously has a hilarious antic in him, but it's not like Victor Lindelof isn't making one serious mistake a game.
Right, right.
I mean, he didn't in this one, but almost all the time. Well, apart from maybe you could say the one where Maguire got in, I mean, Giroud got in front of him.
So every time I see Bailly play, I'm more convinced, despite the hilarious antic, I'm more convinced he's the best defender at our club. You know, he's a natural absolutely. Defender. He's good on the ball, and he's got bags and bags of pace, which is really important. And it would have allowed United to push the game 10 yards further forward. And probably it has a defensive impact, but it has a real attacking impact. I mean, there's clearly Ollie loves or trusts Lindelof because he, when the selection issue comes, he basically inevitably picks Lindelof, but I'm not sure it's one I'd agree with. And it's kind of there's some irony that the best defender in the league right now, Ruben Dias, was brought in to replace Victor Lindelof. So I guess we bought the wrong guy there.
The thing is, we've talked a lot about Dan James, Victor Lindelof, but as Pratik Berlin asks on Twitter, is this the game where good players FC were bad and bad players FC were good? Because Rashford did absolutely nothing of note in this game apart from that free kick. Fernandes not able to bring meaningful contributions to bear on the game. Greenwood, I thought, was the best of our best players, but not particularly good. I thought Scott McTominay was all right, actually, and he had a couple of decent shots.
One from just inside the box, was it? He made just out of camera.
Fred is in bad players FC and McTominay's in good players FC, by the way. Just so you know, if I'm the manager of those two teams, that's the way around that goes. I know it might be a controversial selection among some of our fan base, but that's how I feel about it.
All right, just a quick diversion, because, it's our podcast. I want to name good players FC versus bad players FC, 11 aside, right? Goalkeeper.
Oh, God. Oh, no. Oh, no. Oh, it's a difficult one. It's a really difficult one. Half of David De Gea against half the other half of David De Gea, basically.
Yeah, that's right. Yes, I mean, Ollie obviously believes... Ollie has a lot of faith in David De Gea. He can't do anything wrong. I mean, I'm on the precipice. I mean, at the moment, it's hard to... For me, it's hard to justify De Gea's... continual selection when we know he will make mistakes because that's what he's been doing for 2 and a bit years now. I mean, it predates Ollie, so it's perhaps nearly 3 seasons of decline, and Henderson's going the other way. So I would put Henderson in good players FC and David De Gea in bad players FC, even though I know that De Gea's ceiling is higher than Henderson's, or was.
The thing is, De Gea showed his potential value to both of these teams in this game. One absolutely excellent reaction save where he moved to the left and saved to the right with an incredibly strong hand.
Yep.
And another where he just kicked the ball straight out to a Chelsea player, because you've got to have at least one of those a game.
Under so much pressure when the ball's at his feet. If I was the opposition, time.
I think, this is slightly facetious, but I would agree with you in the kind of where they both end up. I can't believe, by the way, apologies to the listeners that both mine and me and Ed forgot to put our phones on silent, and we've had one notification each during this recording. At right back, I mean, I'm not sure there's an easy candidate for bad players FC here, but I'm obviously putting Wan-Bissaka at good players FC. By the way, we can't make a back four for good players FC. So we're going to have to play a very weird formation with one centre back.
Well, it'd have to be who's the best. We've got him.
We're making an 11. All right. Wan-Bissaka at right back for good players FC.
Brandon Williams, I guess, goes at left back because. Right back, sorry. In bad players FC.
I'm sticking Phil Jones. I'm sticking Phil Jones there.
That's pretty weird.
He played He played right back a lot, Phil Jones did, and he'd be worse at right back.
Yeah. I mean, I like Brandon Williams. He's just had a hard year or so. I mean, I think he's got a load of talent.
I'm not having him a bad player. He's not a bad player.
No, he's not. So, but our centre backs, we've got a choice of, well, you know, Phil Jones, surely is he centre back as well? There's Maguire, no, Lindelof, Baye, and Tounzebi as our four options.
It's very easy. Phil Jones is playing right back because Maguire and Lindelof are together at the heart of Bad Players FC. Because the thing is, even if Maguire might have a shout to play for good players, him and Lindelof are so perfect together for Bad Players FC. They are a match made in hell. So they can absolutely hang out together at the back of that. And Tounzebi and Baye can play good players FC.
Okay, fair enough. And then at left back, I mean, I think Shaw's in good players FC. He's had a good season.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
yeah.
I'm so surprised that we're talking about him like that. I didn't think he would be able to push on. I didn't believe he had it in him anymore, but something happened. And then Telles, I mean, attacking-wise, he's in good players FC. Loves putting in a cross, yep, doesn't he? But defensively, he scares me. To channel my inner Mourinho, yep, he terrifies me.
The thing is, he is a massive ball watcher, and so he will go great with Maguire and Lindelof. But yeah, I mean, Luke Shaw is definitely like hashtag welcome to good players, right? This is, he has been promoted from, he was a big money signing in the summer for good players, and he is welcome to that back four. So we got Wan-Bissaka, Tounzebi, Baye, and Luke Shaw. I'm not even particularly, I mean, look, there's a very solid argument that Maguire should absolutely be in that back four. It's just hard to separate him from his bad players counterpart.
It's very right. True. Like the double pivot in midfield then, that's what, Fred and Matic in bad players FC and Pogba and McSauce in good players? Is that how you'd have it?
Hell yeah. It is, but remember, that this is sort of antithetical to the fundamental ethos of the question of good players versus bad players in this squad, because it's not like there is an equal number of each position. The good ones are all the ones in the front half of the pitch, and like now Luke Shaw for some reason, and the bad ones are all the ones in the back, especially in the middle. But anyway,
I know.
All right,
I'm just forcing you to make choices. So the good players,
I would have it that way.
Then you've got Fernandes, Greenwood, Rashford.
Can I just say, Matic is getting a call up to good players, depending on who we're playing. If we're playing against bad players FC, I might have Matic in good players because he's quite useful in that sort of game. But no, Pogba and McTominay's
lovely passing range, can't defend for his life. I just wouldn't, yeah, I wouldn't exactly ever trust him. Yeah.
So we're playing 4-2-3-1 because we're statistically required by law to play 4-2-3-1.
Well, basically, you're a football weirdo as a coach if you don't play 4-2-3-1. It's the old 4-4-2, isn't it?
Yeah, and it almost literally is the old 4-4-2. By the way, it just called something different now. Fernandes obviously has to. I mean, Fernandes is captain of good players, and plays at 10. Rashford plays on the left. Oh no! Oh no! Oh no! I've just realised what has to happen, and I hate it with every fibre of my being.
You're going to have to put Martial in bad players FC. You're going to have to. I know you don't want to. He's in it.
He's just not a bad player, though.
He's not
a bad player.
By the way, I'm not on some hashtag anti-Martial agenda. I love him as a player. I'm just, right now, his form is atrocious.
Rashford, Cavani, Greenwood.
Yeah.
In front of Fernandes.
And in bad players, it's Martial, Dan James.
And Van der Beek. One other.
Wan-Mata on the right.
Oh, yeah.
I think.
Oh, I hate this. Why did we do this? This is the worst. We've put Wan-Mata and Anthony Martial in bad players.
I know.
This is stricken from the record. Never let it be spoken
of
again.
Okay, so they're playing. Is, what's the score?
about 17-3. The thing is, though, Bad Players versus Good Players is a five-a-side game. That's the whole point of it.
Yeah.
So, you know.
The rondos. I wonder how much they do that in training. So if you're in the bad player rondo, you're oof, not getting in the team at the weekend.
All right, should we take some listeners? Oh, the one last thing about this game that I thought to say was I was shouting, that's a pen, that's a pen, that's a pen.
With your handball.
Was over the referee's shoulder. Like, I mean, he moves towards the ball and punch and hits it.
He didn't give it because it's not above his shoulder, but I don't think that's a natural position. So, they're saying he's...
Are you sure it's not above his shoulder?
Seems like at the point of contact, it's just about under, but I don't know. I mean, I would have given it as a pen, but I'm not the VAR, so...
It was funny watching the way that the replay was being shown, because it really looked like the VAR director really thought it was a penalty and was trying to like emphasize visually, like, no, look, he's moved his hand towards the ball and he's like slowing it down as the ball goes towards and then speeding it up again afterwards.
Yeah, I'd just say, look, if that was at the beginning of the season, before they kind of introduced the, hey, shoulder or not shoulder sort of threshold, that would have been given for sure.
Yeah.
Anything to say about Thursday's game? I mean, no, we completely skipped over it, the Europa League, because you're denying its existence. That's weird as game, wasn't it? I mean, really dull, but a few players we'd like to see, but and he sort of managed Rashford and Fernandez's time. But anything you want to say about it? Do you not enjoy it?
No, there's nothing I want to say. First of all, it's in the Europa League. And second of all, it was a 0-0 draw in the Europa League. I mean, of course, like when he had Fernandes in the starting 11, you're looking tearing your hair out. But actually, I think he's just trying to keep Fernandes and Rashford ticking over, gave them half each, not trying to overstress them, but trying to keep them moving, basically.
He had three goalkeepers on the bench. It's hard shifting people from the under-23s into the first team bubble, and to do that he had to strip the under-23s and they got spanked by Everton last week as a result, so not that you know they're there as a feeder, so it has consequences, and so he didn't have a full bench, you know, three goalkeepers on it, so I understand. I mean, basically to not play Fernandes, he would have had to play Tuanzebe in midfield the whole game, which, you know, he did for part of it anyway, so managed it, and then the draw gives us Milan in the next round, which I'm kind of looking forward to.
Before we come to the draw, though, there are a couple of noteworthy things about that game.
You want to talk about the Europa League. Now you're loving it now, aren't you?
Well, just Sholo Shoretire broke the record for youngest player ever to play for United in Europe.
You know, I don't think I've heard Ollie talk about a young player as much as he's talking about Sholo. He has a lot of faith in this player.
Well, that's kind of exciting, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, it's exciting to see another youngster come through, and especially if he can play wide right in attack, you know. So
he's pretty flexible, so yes, he can do that. But look, there are some exciting young players, and Diallo, as you mentioned, another what do you get, about half an hour or so this time round?
Well, less than that.
I mean, he's not far off having a start. I mean, he didn't do much. But he's super quick, and he loves attacking, and all the first team players, well, the ones that have talked about him, are excited about him, you know. And
it's always a good sign, isn't it? When the squad are kind of buzzing watching one of the youngsters do stuff. I mean, he looks very small, but actually in this particular game, he looked quite sort of wiry. I did see at one point Adnan Januzaj appeared to say something to Sholo Shoretire, and it was like, seeing a few years, lad, I guess, because might have some warnings for him.
Yes, I wonder how many times Diallo has megged Maguire in the rondos, because I reckon it's quite a lot.
Yeah, probably. It was Januzaj played really well in the first half of that game, and made me think that maybe I wasn't just completely wrong when it looked to me like he was going to be a genuine, absolute world beater.
Yeah, no, look, he's 26 now, so I think his chance at a top club is probably gone. But not that Real Sociedad is a bad club at all, but it's obviously, you know, mid-tier in Spain. But yes, you know, so much talent there, but not quite fulfilled.
The I read an article this week because that game also marked the fifth anniversary of Marcus Rashford's debut yep. against FC Midtjylland, and Rashford captained the second half, which was quite nice. But there was an article on the BBC website about James Weir, who is currently playing in Slovakia, I think. There's a chance it's Slovenia. I apologise to all Slovakian and Slovenia listeners.
Sokovia, isn't it? He's in the Marvel Universe.
That's not a real country. At least if I am mixing it up, it's with a real country, not where the Scarlet Witch is from. It really made me think that article, because Weir made his debut. He was under-23's captain at the time, and he made his debut in the same game that Rashford did. He didn't start, but he came on as a sub, one of the many, many players that Louis van Gaal gave a debut to. And then he moved, I think, to Hull, where Mike Phelan was the manager, and then Mike Phelan was shortly sacked. Then he moved to Wigan when Warren Joyce was the manager, and Warren Joyce was very shortly sacked. Then he got a serious injury. And you just think, it made me think about Rashford and you know, it's so easy to just focus on the top of the pyramid. But the extent to which even a player like Jesse Lingard to have made as many appearances as he has for United, and people just say he's like rubbish. And this, you know, it's so ignorant to say that these players are rubbish when it's so rare that one of them breaks through. Like, it's so incredibly hard.
Oh, sure, yeah.
To make it.
I mean, and the base of that pyramid is really big. Not just the kind of pros who aren't quite at the top level, but you know, for Rashford to come out of, you know, under eights, under 13s, 18s, and 23s, and make it through. There's hardly any. You know, that is a steep-sided pyramid. It's just it's really, really hard for people to come through. And you're right. You know, the elite is the elite. And now Rashford's looking the other way. Of course, He's in terms of his career, he's not, you know, right now worrying about the slide down. He's saying, you know, how can I take that next step to be in the class of players that, you know, this week everyone's talking about Erling Haaland and Mbappe. And I think it's fair to say that Rashford's performances aren't quite at that level right now. But, you know, they're not far off, and he needs to do his best performance every week, and he can join that sort of next group of the really exciting younger next generation that are going to come through and take over from Ronaldo and Messi. That's the narrative, of course. So, but yeah, you're absolutely right. And it was a fascinating article and insight into what happens. But there's been so much of that recently, especially with COVID impacting all levels of football and lower levels relying so much on gate receipts rather than television income to survive. You know, squads have been cut, a lot of players lost their income, dropping out of the game, finding it very hard to get their next contract. Contracts are not 5 years, and lots of, you know, debating the media about whether you're going to sign the next one or not because your agent's angling for something. It's you get 2 years if you're lucky, and then maybe you're kicked out, you know. Or in the women's game, you might be on a year-to-year contract. And some of them are earning, you know, not far off minimum wage, to be honest. It's not well paid. Yeah. So, you know, it's a very, very uncertain career, and a few of them make it to the top, and even fewer of them are in the absolute elite level.
And, you know, like what we've just done, we've spent 10 minutes joking about which United players are so bad they deserve to be in a bad players 11. And, you know, we're having a bit of fun or whatever because there's been some bad games. And of course, when you're a fan and you're really invested and you want the team to do well, and especially that, you know, there is no Man United fan. There is no Man United fan over the age of 12 who is not ridiculously spoiled. Like, we are, you might not have like a massively spoiled attitude or whatever, but we're all spoiled in terms of the amount of success and amazing players and all that kind of stuff that we've all seen. I definitely have a conscience slating these people that have sacrificed so much and worked so hard and, you know, all of that kind of stuff. So obviously we're here to kind of assess performance or whatever, but I'm not qualified to assess performance of these players. And, you know, I've like, I've personally sacrificed a lot to do the job that I do, but I haven't been doing that since I was 8 years old. Do you know what I mean? Like, so
right.
Victor Lindelof, right? Widely slated, in my opinion, not the grade that required for United to be a like title contending, heaven forbid Champions League contending club. But like the amount better Victor Lindelof is than an average human at football is absolutely staggering. It's staggering, you know, so.
Yeah, anyway. No, look, that is all completely correct. Except, just one caveat, Dan James is Anyway, should we take a mini break and then come back with some listener questions?
Yeah, and a little chat about Milan. If you want more from the show in between shows, check us out on the socials. We are NQATpod on Instagram, Ed's at NQATpod on Twitter, and we are under our real names on Facebook at No Question About That. Milan.
Milan. We have to call it Milan because James Richardson does. Milan.
Yeah, we have to. Milan. All I want is for us to absolutely smash them because I have rarely been more emotionally invested in a player's career crumbling around their ears than I am currently in Zlatan Ibrahimovic's. Like, that guy, he's always been... I've never really enjoyed his shtick. It was very fun having him at United. We did bonus content where we talked about all his goals at United once and just seeing them all back-to-back, the level of quality was absolutely unreal. Obviously had, like, a big positive impact on the players in the dressing room and all that stuff. And now he's right up there with my least favourite players ever. He's gone from shouting about voodoo to Romelu Lukaku, who had been racistly associated with voodoo in the past. And
by the way, that started by the Everton owner.
So, yeah, right, right. Yeah. And now he basically told LeBron James to shut up and dribble.
Yeah, this I thought that was really disgusting. Yeah.
Yeah, this was told LeBron James. He was told by Fox News to shut up and dribble. So he made a documentary about NBA player activism called Shut Up and Dribble. Zlatan said, basically, I think he's an amazing player, but I hate it when they talk about politics. People should stick to what they're good at. And LeBron gave a response, which I thought was absolutely perfect, where he was like, this is what I'm good at. And he's absolutely right. Like, LeBron is 1,000 times the person that Zlatan Ibrahimovic is.
100%. You know, James won that argument. And frankly, Zlatan should shut up and score goals because...
Yeah, exactly.
When it comes to talking about activism, politics and race, Zlatan clearly doesn't have a clue. He's still scoring goals, though. 14 in 13 appearances for Milan in Serie A this season at nearly 40. Yeah. So he can still do it on the pitch.
That's crazy.
Yeah, be interesting to see the matchup because, you know, his game's kind of built for Maguire and Lindelof. They can defend. He's not going to go run behind them. You know, he
might just... His game is not built for Victor Lindelof, by the way.
That is true. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to this game. I mean, Milan are making something of a renaissance. They're currently second in Serie A. It's a tighter... title race there than it has been in recent years. Juve have been running away with it every year and not under Andrea Pirlo. Although Milan just got spanked by Inter in the derby.
Yeah, very satisfyingly.
Yes. And Romelu scoring the third goal in that one. So, you know, they've plenty of talented players there. But, you know, not at the level of the great Milan sides of the late 80s and early 90s, obviously.
There was some, this was like very trolly, the Europa League Instagram account put up like one of those grids of players. It's like, pick your dream midfield from this. And it was, you know, Keane and Scholes and Seedorf. And you're like, oh God, this is the how far we done fell FCs, isn't it? Like this is definitely faded glory. And faded glory that are both somehow currently second in their relative divisions, right? That's what the nature of this game is.
That's right. I mean, like, look, the players at Milan that you know are trying to take them to the next level. We talked about Zlatan and Donnarumma. You know, still, so I couldn't believe how young he was when I was looking him up He made his debut for Milan. He's like 12 or something, you know. He's out of contract in the summer. That's an interesting one for any clubs looking for a top-level goalkeeper. Simon Kjær was a very good defender, and I don't know that he is really anymore.
I haven't seen one kick of a Milan game apart from like clips of Inter scoring against them.
Yeah, and then there's the Turkish player Hakan Çalhanoğlu. Sorry, completely butchered that. Who I think is looking for a move, and there's a lot of agent-driven talk about him at the moment. Sort of their number 10 creative midfielder who'll be trying to pull the strings. So it should be an interesting tie anyway, better than the mid-tier Spanish side. It's a sort of almost top-tier Italian side, almost.
I'd have an above-average chance of still being able to spell his name based on the amount of times I had to type it when I worked for Bleacher Report, which was peak him being linked with Man United times, as a result of which I watched quite a lot of his free kicks on Y Scout, and they were good. That's a long time ago now. And it's not that long till those games, right? They're the week after next?
Yeah.
Because
all really compressed, yeah. United play Palace on Wednesday and then Europa League the next week, I think.
It comes around quick, doesn't it?
Yeah, yes, it does.
March the 11th, the first one of those. 5 to 6 kickoff, so won't be watching that. We'll no be watching that. It's the home leg first.
5 to 6 at Old Trafford. It's wrong.
Yeah.
Wrong. I will watch it, but it's still wrong.
Let's take some questions. Rushworth Bond says, what's the handball rule? Please explain. Yeah. Anyone? Please.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's rhetorical, isn't it? Does he?
No, I would like. If he doesn't want to know, I'd like you to explain to me the handball rule if you can.
I believe it's natural silhouette, right? So if it hits you and you're in a natural silhouette, then it's not handball.
Yeah. But
it's different. That's when you're defending. So when you're defending, if you're in a natural silhouette, it's not handball. And to further clarify it, if your arm is below your shoulder, that's considered to be a natural silhouette. And if it hits you above the T-shirt line, now that could be, even if you've got long sleeves on, the nominal T-shirt line, sort of midway between your shoulder and your elbow, if it hits you above there, it's not handball. Now, I think that's it. If you're in the attacking phase and it hits you anywhere below the T-shirt line, natural silhouette or not natural silhouette is handball. Does that make sense?
Yeah, but surely both natural silhouette and above the T-shirt line sound like they should be album titles of some kind or other, like R&B albums. You make me feel things above the T-shirt line. Anyway, Bigham RF, Mads Nielsen says, favourite to win the Euros this summer and why? France, because they won the World Cup and they got Paul Pogba.
Yeah, France because they're good. Germany because they've got a lot of good young players coming through at the moment. There's this gap. So there's a lot of good young German players in the 25 to 23 range. And then younger than that, there's been a big sort of debate in Germany about are enough players coming through. England? Well, I don't know. I mean, you know, they're just so prosaic under Gareth Southgate. I think the big factor, though, is like who is burnt out and who is not. So if there's a, I don't know if there's an equivalent of a Greece where we'll have a lot of players who haven't played a lot of football but are good enough players. If there's that and they haven't had to play 60 games in less than a normal length of season, then that could be a big factor. Also, we don't know. I mean, one, UEFA are saying it's definitely going to happen, which is, you know, with all the travel bans and stuff like that. How they can play it across 10 countries just seems impossible right now. I mean, we just say, you see in the Europa League, Arsenal were like 3 minutes from going out on the away goals rule, having played their home leg in Italy and the away leg in Greece against a Spanish team. Was it Spanish?
A Portuguese team.
Portuguese team. Yeah. So weird, you know, and clubs are having to do that because there are travel restrictions of different natures right across the continent.
Yeah, I would say actually you did, that's a really good point mentioning Greece. I almost feel like the favourites to win the Euros as a collective are teams for whom it would be a big upset if they win the Euros. Like, you know, it seems like this would be a very, it would make a lot of sense if a team that isn't, you know, one of the traditional superpowers wins this particular Euros.
No, the one thing I'd say about France is they have a lot of strength in depth. And so if all their top players have played 60-odd games this season and they need to rotate or some surprising players make it in, that is still a factor. They, you know, they're a hell of a lot of strength and depth there.
Yeah, and having won a World Cup, I'm kind of slating Deschamps is obviously like a weird thing to do given that he literally won a World Cup. But I actually wonder whether that sort of really prosaic style that that Deschamps wants is probably quite good for energy conservation and all of those kinds of things. So actually it's probably like probably quite a good summer for a team that's set up like that. They kind of are Greece, but with unbelievably talented players. So, you know, Greece plus. That's their it's not Norway plus, it's Greece plus. _ballpoint Ben says, not a question, but Roy Keane's Instagram's good, isn't it? He said, isn't it, at the end. That makes it a question. There's a question mark right there. It's totally a question, Ben. And yeah, obviously, like, it's, he has a good sense of humour about himself and his public image, clearly.
Yes, I'm here for all Roy Keane content. It's my thing. Love it.
Yeah. The did you watch him and Jamie Redknapp shouting at each other about Tottenham?
Oh, good.
Very funny. Friend of the show, Charlinardo, says, do you know what? Having read that out loud, I've thought that was Charlnado forever. Sorry, Charlie. Anyway, would you rather have to read aloud every word you said or sing everything you say out loud? So you got to write it down and read it out, or you can sing it.
I'm not a big fan of singing, so I'm writing down and reading out. Even if it makes me sound like a news reader. Hello, wife. Good morning.
There's a really funny thing that's gone around on social media of this this anchor, news anchor in America at home torturing her boyfriend by doing the news anchor voice. And it's really, well, are you ready for this evening's date? It's very funny. It's really good. Not a question, but I miss Paul Pogba, says Matthew_Taylor9. We all do. I say we all do, but loads of people don't miss him at all because they can't allow themselves to be wrong. But anyway, Brian One Child says, baking a loaf of bread and can't decide whether to substitute butter for olive oil. Any thoughts? And even before I stopped eating dairy, I would always have gone for olive oil over butter in a loaf because you want that kind of maximum malleability, right, to stretch those glutens.
Yes, so I don't really make bread, but I do make pizza, and you have to really have to get the gluten in there. So, you know, double O flour, obviously, and really work it hard. So, and olive oil works really well there.
Yeah, yeah. So I'm going with a no there. I mean, I guess you'd get that kind of very creamy, rich, almost like an enriched dough. I've watched Bake Off. I know stuff. Name a worse sight in football, says Vieri tweets, than Fred lining up a right-footed shot from the edge of the box. When he nearly scored and Ollie burst out laughing, it just shows
I know. And then he clapped vigorously so to try and hide the fact that he couldn't believe Fred had tried it. Yeah, I mean, if you freeze-framed it there and asked 100 people, is this ending up in the net, nearly in the net, or in row Z, or no, near the corner flag? Yeah, like 90% picked the corner flag. So amazing. I think Fred surprised himself as well.
Yeah. Manny_BMW says, who would be the best hooker duck player at the fun fair? So you need someone with really good hand-eye coordination here. So I wonder whether the goalkeepers might have a bit of an advantage.
Big hands, though.
Although David De Gea would stand like a really long way back from the thing because he was afraid to come out of his goal, something. Haven't scored a non-penalty goal since McTominay versus Man City in the Premier League against the so-called Big Six, says H. Genimo. And Trikanth_Nima says, how frustrating is it to see the lack of ambition against the other so-called top sides? Bit United y those questions for my tastes, but we'll take them.
Yeah. I mean, I talked about this a bit earlier. I mean, look, I think it is a concern, and I don't think it's United parking the bus. There's not too many of those games where it's been a real Mourinho-esque performance. But there has been some caution, and it does feel like there's a lack of creativity. And look, this is a completely different narrative than one we'd have a year ago, where we were complaining how we couldn't break down stubborn defensive sides. Now we score 9 against them. United want to make that next leap. Got to pick up more points than, what is it? It's only 6 points in those games. Not losing games, but not scoring goals. You need to take points off your rivals for the top places, generally.
Yeah, it's been such a long time since we struggled to break down disciplined defensive sides. So when was it? 2 weeks ago against West Brom? I don't know. It was pretty recent. At Jax365 saying, do you guys watch any North American sports? I kind of like basketball and I kind of like NFL, but I don't watch them regularly. You're going to have to get into one now for time zone reasons, Ed.
I don't know. I'm going to find it really hard. Honestly, I struggle. I've been to all American sports and, I've spent a lot of time in this country where I'm now living. And baseball I like for the hot dogs and the beer because they have great concessions. They like food trucks. It's really good. And you just kind of sit there and relax and not much happens. You can't really see anything because the ball goes 100 miles an hour. And once in a blue moon, someone actually manages to hit it. NFL, it's a stop start. I can't get into that. I have been to ice hockey, but I don't care about it. So even though it's a lot of action, it's like hard to... And basketball's much better live than on the TV. Just for me personally, because it only really matters in the last sort of 5 minutes or so, but the kind of physicality of the players and the speed of the game and, how much is going on, really, it really does feel like that when you're at it. So
I feel like if I could suddenly be massively into and know loads about and follow really closely any of them, I'd probably pick basketball because it feels like there's so much nuance and tactics and the players seem kind of really interesting and they often speak much more interestingly than other sports. There seems to be a real culture of openness and honesty, not just about social issues. Obviously, we talked a bit about that earlier, but just in terms of, players' relationships with each other and their relationships with their own teams and stuff. It's very, very kind of interesting and open sport in that regard. And talking of...
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I mean, not an American sport, but I've been to see Socha a few times here at MLS, which is fun. Good crowds. I mean, Seattle, good crowds at the Sounders. The standard's not awesome, but it's doing okay here. Of course, Bex now has a team.
Yeah, managed by Phil Neville, somewhat disgracefully, in my opinion. Does cricket, adds Jax365, have the
don't
best and worst pundits in sports broadcasting?
Well, look, they've got some of the best writers, for sure, about cricket, I think. And I think the game lends itself to adding a bit of colour. And so some really good pundits and some absolute what-sits, and you know who I'm talking about.
Yeah, he says a former England cricket captain and a famous Australian spin bowler come to mind. And we shall agree 100%.
We talk about cricket on the backers content quite a bit, but I don't want to talk about it.
We're going to today as well.
I don't want to talk about it. I'm angry. I'm angry.
We've got to talk about it. People keep telling me the pitch was fine. Ravi Ashwin said
rubbish.
The pitch was fine. So.
Rubbish. Of course he said the pitch was fine. Rubbish.
It's my birthday today, says Real Liam Downey. Happy birthday for yesterday when you listen to this. So an apology for how bad that match was on behalf of United would be nice. Absolutely not, Liam. Absolutely not. You come round here asking us to apologise on behalf of that institution. No way. We are not associated, affiliated or responsible for anything those absolute Muppets do to you on your birthday.
An apology brought to you by Mr. Potato Chips and Pola.
Yeah, but yes, of course, I'm sorry that you had to endure that on your birthday. I feel like United fans should all be allowed to choose not to watch United on their birthday. I mean, there are those that argue that watching Man United is a choice whenever you do it, but apparently that's not the case if you start a podcast about it and then your friend says, you got to watch the match, Paul, because otherwise what are we going to talk about? What was worse, says Lemming plays, this match or the pitches for the last two in New England tests? I actually thought only one of them was really problematic, but...
No, look, if Old Trafford... If this was not Old Trafford, right? But if we played on the pitch just after World War II had ended and Old Trafford had been bombed, that would be the quality of the pitch that we had in the cricket.
Or basically any game between November and March from 1981 to 1993 or whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's been 2.5 years since Solskjaer took charge, says Henke Svensson. Do you feel that you could identify with the club once again, that we've gone back to the roots as some of us were hoping that the appointment would lead to?
Well, so in a football sense, I think that's true. You know, there's clearly limitations in the squad and the team, but I get a sense of where we're heading. Don't you? I mean, especially the transition from being a purely reactive side that only played on the break to one that is now mostly front foot forward, even if sometimes there's more caution, with the players who can cause real damage on the break. So I think from a football perspective, yes, the club is still the same club. It's still the same owners and it still makes all the same mistakes. So yeah, let's not kid ourselves about that part. You know, any success, and it's relative to the last sort of 7 years, any success we're getting now is despite, not because of, the owners. For sure.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the club versus the team, isn't it? Like, the team, absolutely, I feel like it's much easier to identify with them. I like them. Not that I was ever not rooting for them to win, but, like, it's very easy to root for them to do well. And the club is the club. But that was definitely the case in the Fergie era. Love the shirt, hate the club, right? That's the, you know,
right.
It's been the mantra for a long time. Two more questions. JJ Vallejoa says, have you ever listened to the intro song for the podcast at 1.5 speed? It's amazing. I haven't, but I definitely will now. I can imagine that working, actually. I really like that tune.
Have not. It's a good tune. We've done well there. Well, it's not us, but it was mainly Tom and the musicians creating it from our creative concept, and Tom berating them into making it good.
I mean, by the way, that is almost exactly what happened. I think you might have edited what Tom said and sent it to them, if I remember correctly.
Well, because Tom's initial creative feedback was exactly the thing. He's a creative, right? Exactly the thing that he hates getting, which is, this is shit, do it again.
And then very good long-time, old-time friend of the show, Eric Johnson at ERK Tennis, because he switched from an account that talks a lot about Man United to one that talks a lot about tennis. I don't really understand what's happening in tennis. The only things I know about tennis is from Eric's Twitter account. So if you like it, you should follow it. But he says, seen any good shows recently? And I've quite been enjoying, I like a reasonable quality sitcom. Do you know what I mean? Like any sort of upper third of American sitcoms I like. So Netflix put Superstore on there.
It's pretty funny.
And I like that show. And I found WandaVision to be...
Yeah.
I can't believe WandaVision exists. Like, it's incredible that the biggest budget franchise in the world was like, let's do an absolutely wild concept show. I know. Cheers, guys.
I would love to have been in that pitch meeting when it was greenlit.
Yeah.
Got an idea for you.
So, are we going to... Spoilers for WandaVision, not like massive, massive story spoilers, except if you haven't seen it at all, in which case skip forward a minute. But like, if you've been following it, just the concept. So, you know, we're going to bring in the MCU, right, at some point. Are we going to like hint at that in the first episode? Or are we just literally going to make the first episode seem like it's a sitcom, but with Wanda and Vision it? No, I think we're going to do the latter, because we're Marvel. We can do what we like. Unbelievable. Like the level of super indiness of this. It's an indie passion project with an insane budget. And yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
No, it's right. I mean, you get a few characters from the Marvel Universe sort of slowly coming in, but the sort of big reveal about what the hell is going on here is not until episode 8. of a 9-part show.
So it's kind of amazing, really amazing, actually. And just not just conceptually amazing though, but also really well put together, really well acted, well written. I love it. I think it's been great. A real pleasant surprise, because actually I wasn't particularly turned on by the original concept of, you know, for some reason, but then yeah, it was just lacked imagination. So we should preview the fact that Man United are playing Crystal Palace away in midweek, and then
right.
Oh, everyone get ready for another thrill-a-minute Sunday afternoon, next Sunday afternoon, when we play Manchester City in what will no doubt be a thrilling back-and-forth adventure of super football, not two teams that would both absolutely bite your hand off for a 0-0 draw.
Yeah, so are we doing a midweek podcast because this is real football? Will you do it? Will you?
Let's give that a solid maybe.
Okay, solid maybe. Well, Palace. Palace are being Palace this season, aren't they? Roy Hodgson is still in charge, unbelievably, and they're doing, you know, pretty mixed as a result. Beat Brighton the other week, not a surprise. Got spanked by Burnley. Bit of a surprise.
You said that Palace Brighton game, not a surprise. That was 2.5 XG to 0.1 XG. Palace win 2-1 somehow. Like, it's a ridiculous game of football.
0.09 XG against Fulham. That's not possible. Not a lot. It's not possible. I mean, you know, don't you get 0.09 from, like, taking a kickoff? They had 3 shots, none of which were very good. So, yes, this is Palace. They're not an awesome side. What else do we say about this? Palace are not great. United really do need to win this game.
Yeah, I mean, it's a hugely important game. I mean, today was an opportunity to capitalise on the fact that Leicester lost pretty unexpectedly to Arsenal, right. I would say. But it was against Chelsea. And whilst the game was boring, the level that we're at right now, 0-0 draw against away at Stamford Bridge, all right, you'll take it. If we don't come back with something in this next game, that's a big problem. But I'm not sure it's trivial to say that we definitely will. I mean, you know, sure. I've kind of joked about this all season that like after we win, I can't see any possibility that we won't win the next game. And when we have a boring draw, I can't see any possibility that we'll play well. But we're going to need Rashford and Fernandes, one or the other or both, to do something in this game, because we are really short of players and there are no other options. It's coming from them or it's not coming, basically, unless Greenwood does something.
Yeah, true. But I think we know how Palace will play. I mean, they do have the players to play on the break. I think they will sit deep. I think United will have 60% possession. It will be up to us to break that down. It would really help if we scored a bit earlier in the game. And Palace's big problem is scoring goals. You know, they're like, obviously, they got a fairly hefty negative goal difference, but it's scoring. Wilfred Zaha has 9. The next best is Benteke on 4 in 19 appearances. I mean, he was good for about a season, wasn't he, Benteke? And then he forgot how to score goals. And they're overachieving their expected goals quite a bit, which tells you something about, you know, how hard it is. Maybe they've been efficient taking those few chances that they've created.
Yeah, I mean, that kind of the fact that a team scored that few goals and are overperforming their expected goals is a very bad sign for how functional their attack is. And they've obviously, like, Eze was a super fun, like, one of my favourite players to watch in the first half of this season. I haven't seen a Palace game for a while because it's always kind of felt like a chore to, you know, when you're looking at the fixtures, when there's so many games you can watch every weekend, you're probably mostly skipping the Palace one, aren't you? Zaha didn't play against Brighton. Was he back for the Fulham game? I'm not sure. We should probably work that out because that makes a difference. I tell you, the one thing that I would want to see above almost everything in the United lineup is just Eric Bailly in the side. It seems to me there's absolutely no reason to play Maguire and Lindelof in this game because you would expect Maguire and Lindelof absolutely to be the pair that start against City at the weekend, and recovery pace could be invaluable. It could really free up United to be really bold with their fullbacks in particular in this game. So I really hope that's what we do.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, there will be some rotation because Ollie does tend to make 4 or 5, and there has to be with that big City game coming up. Zaha didn't play. It was Ayoub, Benteke and Townsend up front. And that would obviously help. Benteke is not Zaha. He's much slower and much easier to defend, I think, if you're Maguire and Lindelof, you know, the kind of player that they will like defending against. I think that's exactly the pattern. I'd be really surprised if it's not United with most of the ball and trying to push on and Palace trying to catch them out on the transition.
Yeah, absolutely. So, I don't know what I predicted for the Chelsea game on our recording last week because it's a very long time ago and I barely remember doing it. But I was talking to my dad this afternoon just before the game and I was like, this is absolutely 100% nailed on 0-0 this game. So that wasn't a surprise. This Palace game, I feel, is a little more difficult to predict. I don't really have a prediction. I'm going to go with a 2-0 United win just on the basis that I do think we'll have too much for them if Fernandes or Rashford click a bit.
Okay, I'm going to say 1-0 because, you know, I don't know, I've got to pick a number.
Yeah,
it's boring if I pick the same one.
And in case we don't do a recording, I'm going to predict a 1-0 City win. I think that's going to be a drab game of football. That's my main prediction for that one.
You know, the only games of football we've had them against, well, no, that's not quite true because we did have the one when McTominay scored from like 40 yards out. But there's been quite a lot of drab ones or ones where they've, you know, given us a real spanking and they're in unbelievably good form. I mean, this is going to be one where United are willing to park the bus, isn't it? It's got to be. It's probably the only option against a City team playing this well. Problem is they're scoring from all parts of the pitch. I mean, their two centre-backs scored in the win against West Ham, which, you know, and they're grinding out a lot of results as well. You know, even when they don't play, it's just, absolutely, you know, trucking along. And we've gone from United leading at the turn of the year to mid-February end of February in the title race looking like it's completely over. So even if we win...
it is, isn't it?
Well, if we win... Didn't win today, but if we beat Palace and then beat City, we could get to within, 7 or 8 points or something like that.
It's totally done because the thing that it looks like is that Guardiola has really cracked the pandemic season. You know, he's really, he's obviously got the budget that really helps with that. But you know, I think they're playing the right kind of football for the challenge that they're currently facing. And I think they're going to sleepwalk the Premier League.
Yeah.
And you know, it'll be interesting to see whether he can finally break his kind of decade-long Champions League curse.
No, I think you're right. They're very efficient, aren't they? And, you know, having that much of the ball all the time is and he's got the squad. As he talked about in his press conference, you know, tongue firmly in cheek, because he was being a bit moody with Klopp talking about budgets the other week. But it was kind of fun, his presser before the weekend.
Yeah. Those two arguing, great, about which team's better. You're both terrible. All right. And to hear what we think of other managers, just a little thing before we get onto the backers content. Thank you to everyone that signed up to the Patreon this week, because I said in the last show that we're going to dedicate a significant portion of the backers content to having a massive go at Jose Mourinho. I hope no one was disappointed. Annoyingly, they won 4-0 this week. So we can only.
I was just going to say, how are you going to get your hate out in a 4-0 win?
I've got one. I've got a line lined up. Oh! And by the way, I thought Liverpool had just scored a hilarious own goal, but it's been flagged for offside. So we won't have that to talk about during the backers content. But anyway, stay tuned for that if you are a patron backer, and everyone else will see you either on Friday or next Monday after these two games. Take good care of yourselves.
Have a good one.